to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better.
Geraldo.
77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
See the boys in mean business, busting out dead or alive. I can hear the hound dogs on my trail. All hell breaks loose, alarm and sirens wail. Like a game, if you lose, go to jail. Tonight there's gonna be a jailbreak.
Jailbreak. Thin Lizzy, you know who we're sending that song out to today. Welcome back. 77 WABC, 8 minutes after 10 o'clock. So did a well-endowed inmate Romeo use his biggest asset to engineer upstate's great escape? I love that. That's the lead theory from the New York Post, that the real story behind the epic prison breakout was the size of one of the con's penis. We'll have more on that later, I'm sure. You're waiting with bated breath for that report on the penis size, the well-endowed inmate Romeo. I'll be asking your opinion on the prison break more broadly. I want you to call me if you know anything. Certainly, the signal reaches the area up there. I'd like anyone around who knows anything going on. We hear there is some breaking news coming from that area. The area around Plattsburgh, New York. So as soon as we get those details, I certainly will be letting you know. But I want to start out this Monday. I hope you all remember that I had that chance encounter at 21 on Thursday with American Pharoah's jockey Victor Espinoza. And I reported that Victor guaranteed victory of the little horse in the big race, the Belmont Stakes, the Triple Crown. Here's the call.
American Pharoah's got a two-length lead. Frosted is all out at the 16th pole. And here it is. The 37-year wait is over. American Pharoah is finally the one. American Pharoah has won the Triple Crown.
Listen to the roar of that crowd. The first Triple Crown winner in 37 years. Don't you envy those intrepid 90,000 New Yorkers? I mean, you really have to. They risk getting caught again in that epic traffic jam. I mean, I went to the Super Bowl at Giant Stadium, the epic traffic jam. They had one last year at the Belmont Stakes where you had another attempt to win the Triple Crown. But they went to the racetrack anyway. And I just envy being in that crowd. They say that the charge that swept through them as American Pharoah drove to the finish line. Imagine adding your voice to that thunder that broke over Belmont. I'd like to congratulate Victor. Congratulate American Pharoah. And the soon-to-be legendary horses, Egyptian-American owner Ahmed Zayed, who's a Jew, you say, Noam Layden?
Yeah, he's originally from Cairo. Very small Jewish community there now. I think there's like 40 Jews, maybe. But he was born there in 62. And it was a businessman in Cairo, a beverage businessman. Heineken bought him out recently in the last, I don't know, 10 or 15 years for a couple $100 million. And that's where all his money comes from.
And they went to Schneerson's gravesite?
He didn't go, actually.
So the Jew didn't go, but
no.
The Mexican went.
Yes. the rider, the horse rider himself, Victor Espinoza, went to Rabbi Schneerson's grave, famous Lubavitch rabbi.
Sure, I remember when he was alive.
And if you've ever been there, I have, it's fascinating. You go and there's a double wide trailer right outside his plot, his graveyard, and you go inside and there's videos all about Schneerson's life. And then there's stacks of white paper. And on that white paper, you fill out wishes and dreams that you want to come true. So women who are having a hard time becoming pregnant, if you need money for something, whatever it may be, health. And then you go, you say a certain prayer over his grave, and then you rip that white piece of paper into as many pieces as you can, and you throw it on his grave. And on his grave are tens of thousands, if not millions, of pieces of white paper. And that's what Espinoza did.
Fantastic. I mean, if I need a rating or something happening more important in my life, I may make that pilgrimage. Well, congratulations to Victor, and you heard it here first. And if you listened to me, you would have bet your money. I think the $2 bet returned $3.70, something like that. So imagine if you bet $2 million.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
A lot of dough. All right, we're not paying any attention to the Stanley Cup. So I want to get through the sports news in a hurry. I mean, Tampa, Chicago, you know, if you're not in Tampa or Chicago, I think it's a big yawner. But the other huge sports event, that heart-stopping NBA playoffs between Golden State and Cleveland Cavaliers. I mean, I love LeBron James. I think he's the best basketball player who ever lived. The Cavs on my team, obviously, Erica hailing from Shaker Heights, Cleveland. They almost won the game one in California, the Cavs did. They lost a heartbreaker in overtime when LeBron missed the last second shot. But last night, game two, fantastic. King James scoring 39 points, but that unlikely undrafted point guard from Australia, Matt Dellavedova, he scored the key basket at the end. Here's the call of the end of the Cavs Golden State game last night.
Iguodala to inbound from the forecourt down to our right. Bounces to Curry. Curry's guarded by Dellavedova. 8 seconds left. Looks to drive. Dellavedova cut him off. Step back. Jumper. It's an air ball. It's grabbed by LeBron. LeBron gets fouled. Matt Dellavedova pumps his fist in the air. 4 seconds left. LeBron will shoot free throws. Terrific defense by Dellavedova.
All right, they won by two. Terrific game. I think that this may end Cleveland's more than half century drought. They've not won a championship in any sport.
Yo, wow.
Since I think the Indians in 54 or something. Uh-huh. I should look that up before I say it, but it's something like that. Okay, let me get to the real news today. I said at the top of the show that the Post is reporting that because one of the escape killers from that maximum security Dannemora Penitentiary, I'm telling you, I've seen that place. It's a fortress. It's a fortress. The 19th century Clinton Corrections Facility is located 20 miles from the Canadian border. And because they're saying now that one of the escapees was a well-endowed Romeo, and because of that, they are questioning a female prison worker who may have been seduced by the inmate, the 48-year-old convicted murderer Richard Matt, seduced into cooperating with him and his cellmate, a 34-year-old killer, David Sweat. I mean, they obviously needed outside help. Now, there's no doubt. They needed the power tools to cut through the steel walls, the pipes, make that daring escape. So they're theorizing that they may have gotten the tools from this female corrections employee, not a prison guard. I don't know how they managed to get the tools, how they managed to work them. I mean, power tools make noise. So before you start rooting for them, though, it's not Shawshank Redemption. You have to remember that Matt, the Romeo, kidnapped and beat a man to death. His accomplice, Sweat, even worse. He killed the sheriff's deputy, then he later killed and dismembered his former boss. So these are two sweethearts still on the loose. How does this happen? Here's Governor Andrew Cuomo. You have Governor Cuomo there. Here's Cuomo.
It's very important that we locate these individuals. They are dangerous. And we want to make sure that they don't inflict any more pain or any more harm on any New Yorkers.
All right. So, again, don't root for them. They're killers, armed and dangerous. The state police just put out a statement. We have no updates. I cannot confirm the rumors about the female. This comes from the spokesman for the state police. But we are hearing, and we hope to hear from upstate. We're hearing that something is happening. We'll let you know as soon as we do. 16 minutes after 10 o'clock. Give me a call, 866-ORALO. I'll be right back.
Geraldo, the truth behind the story. For New York, live, local, on it, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
And we have a train and assist posture. They operate effectively.
All right, this is the President of the United States. He's attending that G7 summit meeting, the G7, that group of seven prosperous democracies. Used to be G8, but they kicked the Russians out because of Ukraine. They talk about Ukraine, too. They talk about Ukraine. He's talking about ISIS now. Talked about the Iranian nuclear negotiations, FIFA. They talked about just about everything. Nothing newsworthy, at least not yet, as far as I know, except the president claiming significant progress against ISIS and saying that they will ultimately be defeated. Well, you're not seeing a lot to make that happen, at least not lately. But we were talking about this escape from the upstate New York prison. 866 Geraldo, what do you know? What do you think? He is Steve in Brooklyn. What's on your mind, Steve? Thanks for calling.
Geraldo, what's going on, man? Listen, there's something really, really fishy. I know you touched on it before. You know, power tools? Come on. You know how much power tools, how much noise power tools make?
And cutting through concrete, bricks, and steel. Absolutely.
Something doesn't make sense. The whole story doesn't make sense. And by the way, this is another reason why they should bring the death penalty back. Because guys like this should be taken out once and done. We don't have to worry about all
this. I understand the theory. I don't necessarily object, although, I get the creeps when it comes to the application of the ultimate punishment for just run-of-the-mill murderers. But this group does seem a little above and beyond. I mean, the one guy killed at least two people. He dismembered one of them. One of his victims was a deputy sheriff. So I don't disagree with you, Steve. One and done. In this case, two and done. But, this is a very interesting story. I want to get my buddy Bernie Kerik on the line. He was the corrections commissioner. So, Bernie, give me a call. I want you to tell me about this, because it's what Steve said about this thing being right out of a movie script, in a sense. Remember Shawshank Redemption? How do you? I mean, I can understand how you put a dummy in your bed to fool a guard in a bed check, but don't they physically inspect cells? I mean, it would seem to me that would be a no-brainer in a facility like this. I am certain, virtually certain, that they have to have bed checks, and they have to look, it's not like they used a pencil or a little saw that came in a cake,
right,
to cut through this stuff.
I mean, like Shawshank. This was like a serious escape.
This is a very serious escape from two major, major players. And it is...
You wonder, what did they promise the people who were helping him? You have to think there's more than one. If there was power tools involved, if there was maybe somebody waiting on the other side once they pushed through that manhole cover, that's two people, right, potentially. What were they promised in return for the work? Is it true what the New York Post is saying? Or was it just sexual favors, or is there more to it?
I love that. I love that whole idea that the guy is well endowed. But, I mean, to even come up with that idea, to come up with the idea that because a guy is lavishly endowed, he could seduce a female employee. I mean, who made that connection? That it had to be somebody who, I mean, was the guy's physical endowment well known? Was it notorious in the prison?
And could there have been flirting between the two? I mean, that's hard to believe, too.
But I mean, how do they know that the guy's well endowed?
Well, only from the showers, but, I guess. Right?
But he must have been hung like a donkey for them to be talking about it and to come up with this idea.
Maybe she was the tailor. She had to make the underwear extra large so she knew how big he was.
I love it. I really. And you know what is curious, though? We're going to get Commissioner Kerik at 10:35, actually. What I love about it, first of all, is why do we, I mean, don't you, honestly speaking, don't you root for the escapee at times? I mean, there is an aspect of romance about a prison break.
Sure.
This lavishly, elaborately schemed and carried out. The enterprise required, the innovation, imagine the terrifying moments where you feared exposure, that the slightest slip, you know, and a fellow inmate in the cell next door who had to know, you know, snitching them out for favors there.
Right.
And compare this. What is interesting is here's two multiple murderers who managed this elaborate scheme. And contrast that to what Bernie has told us in the past about, you know, people acting out at Rikers to get put in solitary and get, you know, get checked on every hour, who have the lights on 24/7, you know, and they're because they're acting out, or they're, you know, drug addicts, or in his case, for protective custody. And here you have two seasoned murderers who left to their own devices, who managed to put together a tool shed of elaborate equipment to do what is, you would think, impossible. It had never been done before. The prison's built in the 19th century.
Right.
They've never had a breakout.
That's
before.
Unbelievable. Did you watch Governor Cuomo taking the route himself?
No, I like that.
That videotape of him was great.
Well,
him
good
climbing
for him.
Up the pipe.
Good for him.
And, yeah.
I understand that he did that instead of going to the Belmont to watch the Belmont Stakes because he didn't want to be criticized. But good for him. It was, you know, it's a good way to bring attention to the story. And you've got the rest of the news. Here's Noam.
Live, local, on it. 866 Geraldo, where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
Under well-established precedent, there is no reason why the existing exchanges should be overturned through a court case. It has been well documented that those who passed this legislation never intended for folks who were going through the federal exchange not to have their citizens get subsidies.
I don't know exactly what he's talking about right now. The president continuing that news conference at the G7 summit in Germany. The bigger headline was he admitted that we don't have a complete strategy yet for dealing with ISIS. You know, I'm telling you, that's the understatement maybe of all time, given the fall of Ramadi and huge swaths of Anbar province to the Sunni Muslim extremist group. So the president continues, we are talking the best headline. Marty had the best headline on the prison escape upstate. Prison officials make boner.
That's great.
I'm referring to the surmise in the New York Post that the New York Post that one of the inmates was a well-endowed Romeo, notoriously well-endowed Romeo, who perhaps seduced a female prison employee who got them somehow the power tools. That aside, if you could put that aside, the fact is they are on the loose. We are expecting some kind of news from upstate. We don't know what it has. I don't want to tease you unnecessarily. We just know that they are, that the game is afoot upstate as they continue this intense manhunt. Former Corrections Commissioner and Police Commissioner of New York City, Bernard Carrick, joins us right now. Commissioner, how you doing?
Good morning, Geraldo.
So it does sound like a movie script, as you said.
Yeah, listen, this is something, you know, one of these escapes from Alcatraz, if you will. But at the end of the day, one, they're going to find the guys. Two, they're going to find out what happened. And, you know, there's no doubt in my mind they had inside help. It's gonna, you know, there's two issues about the inside help. One, somebody got them the equipment they needed, gave them schematics on how to get out and where to get out and so forth and so on. But two, you have to question the internal workings of the facility and why this wasn't, these were maximum security prisoners. These were guys that wanted for murder. They convicted of murder. You know, what were the officers doing? How often were they searched? How often were their cells searched? You know, what was the accountability within the system by correctional staff? These are all questions that people are going to look at. And, you know, where they are, look, the first thing they're going to do, they're going to go after the families, the girlfriends, the kids.
That's how they caught one of these guys, Sweat, the younger man, escaped previously. They caught him at his brother's house. Well, Commissioner Carrick, hold on. Commissioner Carrick's on the line. You got a question for him? I hear, or a comment. Here's Anthony from New Jersey. What's up, Anthony?
Yes. I was wondering if they had considered the fact that they may have come in from outside through that manhole cover in the street and tunneled that way into the prison and opened it from the inside. I just don't see how they could have done it by hiding power tools in their cells. So I think they came from either a location inside the prison that went and got it through the cell, then outside, or came in from outside and tunneled their way to that prison cell.
Well, that's very provocative, Anthony. Well thought out. What do you think, Commissioner Carrick?
Yeah, I think it's premature to answer it. You know, it's a possibility. Look, the one thing I will say, though,
that manhole cover was locked from the inside, chained from the inside, not the street side. I mean, they don't manhole covers don't have locks on the outside. They have them on the inside.
Exactly right.
So how do they lift that thing and open it from the outside? I don't know. I guess there's a way. I don't know.
I can assure you, anything on the outskirts of that facility, that stuff is secured down as well. So it's going to be interesting to hear how it happened. They definitely had inside help. They may have had help from the outside.
But how often is a cell like that typically searched?
In a place like that, where you have these guys, you know,
killers, life without parole.
Should be at a minimum once a week. At a minimum. Depending on, and one of these guys had a...
I would have thought more than once a week, but you say once a week.
Well, at a minimum, I said. At a minimum. So you have facilities like that on Rikers in state prisons around the country. They may be searched 3-4 times a week, depending on the prisoners. If one of them was an escape risk, which he was, you know, that guy, you know, they put more focus and attention on that guy. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out.
So where would a guy, let's assume that this Lothario with the big member could seduce a female employee of the jail. How could they get together? I mean, what kind of socializing could they, or would you sneak in acetylene torch in a purse?
All you have to do is look at history. You know, we had a couple scenarios in New York City, but Baltimore, the federal facility in Brooklyn, you know, through the bars, actually, in closets, you'd be surprised.
That you could have sex.
How it happens, right.
That's I'm only laughing because, you know, human nature, there's a great deal of enterprise. All right, here's another question from David in New Jersey. What's up, David?
Hi, Geraldo. Thanks for taking my call.
Okay, buddy.
I just wanted to ask Commissioner Carrick, what kind of training do wardens and corrections officers have, especially when you get out from the cities into these rural areas like I'm in?
Well, you know, the reality is there are state minimum standards, federal minimum standards that, you know, that the training curriculum is put together with.
But you know Dannemora. I mean, maybe not from the inside, but what about that? I mean, it's a 19th century Clinton correction. It's a real, you know, one way in and no way out.
It's the James Cagney. It's the sort of the James Cagney type facility. But the training of officers and the training of staff, and especially New York State, their training, I've known a number of their commissioners over the years. They have great training, great staff. That's what surprises me about this. You know, there was a lax somewhere, and it's going to be interesting to see where it is.
But, I mean, contrast that to the Rikers guy. I did 3 years stealing a backpack or something. Put him in solitary. I mean,
listen, you know, I was sickened by that story. He went in at 16 years old for stealing a backpack or whatever it was, a robbery of a backpack. 3 years on Rikers without a trial, over 400 days in solitary confinement. And then people are questioning, you know, why he had paranoia. You drive these kids crazy. I mean, that's what solitary does. It drives people insane. And then you question, you know, why they are the way they are when you let them out. And I think people forget they're going back into society. It's a shame what happened to that kid.
He killed himself, right?
He killed himself, you know, and it's just a shame.
And here you got two murderous scumbags, and they're allowed to percolate an elaborate escape right under the noses of the authorities. You know, Noam is loving your book. He talks about it all the time.
I finished it a long time ago, but you've made me think so much about it. And what I really appreciate about the fact that you wrote it is you're speaking for a community that nobody will speak out for. Lawmakers are afraid to do it. There are prison advocates, but a lot of times they're ignored. And for you, somebody in your position, having been a former police commissioner and corrections head, for you to say the things you're saying is huge. It really is. And keep on talking, because
from jailer to jail, this is the bestseller.
I mean, really, really great
stuff.
Well,
hopefully people are listening.
Commissioner Carrick, I appreciate your expertise.
Thanks, guys.
Okay,
have
man.
Have a good day.
46 minutes after 10 o'clock. We'll talk more about this one. If you got an idea, theory, let me know. If you know anything, let me know at 866-HERALDO. Whatever else happened to you over the weekend, let me know. We'll talk more. There's so much going on. We'll be back. 77 WABC.
Live and local, the Tri-State's most important issues with Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Still tracking this extraordinary prison break from upstate's Dannemora Prison, the Clinton Correction Facility, it's its official name, two maximum security murderers managing to break out. William in Brooklyn may have a theory. What is it, William? Thanks for calling 866-HERALDO.
Well, there were just two points. Well, the first one was about the horse race, the Triple Crown.
Yeah.
Where you mentioned that the Mexican went to the grave of the rabbi, but the Jew didn't. Why can't a Mexican be a Jew?
He's not. He's not. I checked. But I mean, he could be.
I know.
He could be. I mean, I'm Puerto Rican and I'm a Jew, so there you go.
No, so am I. But the point is that a lot of people, you know, you make the comment that a Jew doesn't go to the grave, a Mexican does. But why?
William, you're stretching there, buddy. What about the prison break?
Okay, the prison break. My only question was, how do we know that the guy didn't have, let's say, a helper who was homosexual?
You think it was like a gay conspiracy?
Well, even if the prisoner himself was heterosexual, you know, to get out of prison, if you're there for 25 years, you may commit a homosexual act. And if the other people saw that he was well endowed in prison, I'm sure word got around that. Do you know what I'm saying?
You got a lot of action. I got it, William. I guess well thought out there. They have a $100,000 reward out for the two escaped convicted killers, $50,000 apiece. They're checking now, trying to find out how these two murderers obtained the power tools they used to break out of prison. I had the funniest tweet I saw this weekend, and I don't know what made me think of it, but which is the weirder Republican, Bruce, Caitlyn Jenner, or me? But Lindsey Graham was so gracious. You see that?
I saw that, yeah.
So Lindsey Graham was asked if he would accept Caitlyn Jenner into the Republican Party. The former Bruce Jenner, as you know, has announced that he's a Republican, which I'm sure is going to stress out Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio and the other Tea Party guys. I think Rand Paul, he's a live and let live kind of guy, but so is Lindsey Graham. I'm telling you, Lindsey Graham is really impressing me as these Republican candidates. I'm going to get back to the topic du jour, but as these Republican candidates scramble for some recognition, because only 10 of them will make the stage at the Fox News debate, the first debate in August, I guess it is. So the first debate is in August. Only the top 10 will make the stage. You already have almost 20 announced nominees for the Republican nomination. So they're all trying to distinguish themselves one way or the other. It will be fascinating. I mean, I think Lindsey Graham could be a breakout surprise. I told you how he had the most expansive and inclusive vision of immigration reform I've heard from a Republican in an awfully long time, and I think it will stand him in good stead. You know, it won't win him the nomination, but it could get him on that stage.
You know, the best
from
part
there, you never know what can happen.
You know, the best part of him talking about Caitlyn Jenner over the weekend was he was struggling to keep using the right pronoun. And he
His
really
hair.
Wanted to get it correct, which was kind of cool, because he was like, he would say, well, she, did you notice that? And but he wanted to get it correct, and I think that's smart.
I've gotten a lot of gas from my stance on Caitlyn Jenner, thinking that the whole thing's a scam. Talk more about a lot of things after this.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Okay, welcome back. 6 minutes after 11 o'clock. Let's go right to upstate New York, to the biggest city near the Clinton County Correctional Facility, Plattsburgh, New York, where the editor of the Press Republic, Lois Claremont, joins us. Lois, thanks a lot for coming on.
Hi.
What's going on?
The breaking news today is we're hearing that a female employee of the tailor shop at the prison is being questioned in connection with the breakout. And that's about all we can say about it right now.
So she worked in the tailor shop
at the prison in the main building.
Right, I understand. So they would have had access to the tailor shop, these convicted killers?
Right. Everybody, all the inmates who have access there are people who have been cleared that they're, you know, not a problem in prison, and you have to work your way to be able to work into the tailor shop. Once you get in there, it's a big open room with tables all over the place, and they do sewing. They make uniforms. They make different materials. They're shipped out to other prisons, and you work within civilian employees in there.
Is it confirmed, Lois, before I let you go, is it confirmed that either Sweat or Matt worked in the prison, in that tailor shop?
No. I mean, officially, no one is confirming anything. They won't even confirm what we reported today, but we have a lot of good sources in the community. We know a lot of people who work in the prison, and we feel very confident of it.
So in the Lake City there, in Plattsburgh, New York, are there many visible law enforcement? Are they searching everywhere? What's going on?
They're not in Plattsburgh itself so much, but they're all over the area here. And, for example, Saranac School District, which has about 3 school buildings near the prison area, all the students are staying. The buildings were carefully searched. There's law enforcement people stationed at each of the schools. The students aren't being allowed out for recess. They're being kept inside. We talked with parents this morning, and they have a lot of confidence that their children are safe, and most people seem to send their kids to school. But there's roadblocks everywhere. Dannemora is probably 20 miles from Plattsburgh, but it takes you like 40 minutes to get there right now because you have to go through so many roadblocks.
So now there's roadblocks everywhere. Isn't there a military, an air base up there?
There used to be years ago. It closed in 1995.
Oh, sorry, I missed that news.
No, it's been closed for quite a while, but there's a lot of, we have a lot of prisons in our area. We cover Clinton, Essex, and Franklin counties, and we have 9 prisons in our area.
So are people, you know, is there any rooting for the escapees, or is there terror?
God, no. People, I would say there's not as much fear up in this area. I think people here figure that they're not around anymore. This was such a resourceful plot and so well executed that I think we all think, people in this area, that their planning didn't end when they popped out of the manhole, that they had something figured out.
That's very brilliantly stated there. Lois Claremont, editor of the Press Republic. How far away is Canada again?
We're a half hour from the Canadian border.
So is that the surmise that they're in the Great White North?
People have wondered about that, but actually it's harder to get across the border than you think. There's a lot of checkpoints, and there's cameras in the fields there. So it's not set that they could have gone there. It would have been a smart place to head, but it's difficult.
Not so easy to get from where you are there, even though it's relatively close.
Right. A normal traveler goes through border checkpoints. Somebody sneaking across would try to go through the woods, but there's a lot of wires set up that trip cameras and alarms, and it's more difficult than people think.
I would imagine so, especially in the era of terrorism. So, Lois Claremont, I'd love to check back with you, editor of the Press Republic up there in Plattsburgh. If you hear anything, we'd love to know.
Okay.
Thank you very much for your reporting.
Bye-bye.
So the tailor shop, that makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Tailor shop, you schmooze everybody, even if you're a convicted murderer, you get to work there. It all depends on your behavior in prison. So if these guys are model brown-nosing, yes sir, no sir, let me do anything I can to live outside of my cell, you know, I could see how that, and then the guy gets there, the guy with the big Johnson, he gets there, starts schmoozing with the
he's a ladies' man.
Ladies' man, yeah. Charming. You know, who knows, I could see it. I could see it clear as day. But then how do they get that stuff in?
Power tools. That part starts to make sense.
How does the tailor get access to the power tools.
Or bring them in.
And if she brings them in, don't they have metal detectors?
Right. I mean, you would think the civilians go through the same thing that the prisoners go through to get into that tailor shop.
Bernie mentioned the Baltimore jail. I remember the stories about the Baltimore City jail, where incidentally the murder epidemic continues a couple more this weekend. But the Baltimore City jail, it had one prisoner was the kingpin of the whole prison, and he impregnated four female corrections officers there. I mean, the whole place was run by this guy. They had access to drugs, and obviously, so it was sex, drugs, and rock and roll there. My buddy Stan's been holding on about the Belmont race. I want to just squeeze him in here and get back to the topic of the day. What's up, Stan? What are you thinking about?
How are you, my friend?
Good. Thanks for calling. What's up?
What a great race. You didn't mention Bob Baffert.
The trainer. Well, Hall of Fame trainer.
He tells this jockey, after winning two major races, go to the front and let them come to you. And that's exact. Nobody challenged this horse. Nobody came near him. Nobody was even close to him. And did it wire to wire on the largest racing track in the country.
A mile and a half race.
Unbelievable.
So don't you wish you were there, though, Stan?
Let me tell you, there's a controversy, and this is the controversy. Kentucky Derby at Louisville, over 100,000. Preakness at Pimlico, 120,000. Belmont Park, the largest facility, 90,000. There is something wrong with the NYRA. Last year's problem with transportation, they screwed up royally. Many tracks use the infield to put people in when they have major events. Not the NYRA. They don't know how to run a system. They don't know how to run a great track. Privatize Belmont Park. I hate to say that. I love government to a large extent, but privatize it. Let the private industry run that track. It's a beautiful track. It deserves better than it got. 90,000, yes. I was at the Ranchito. I didn't go there because they're charging $25 to sit all the way upstairs.
Did you bet on American Pharoah as I told you to?
I got to be honest, I bet against it.
Gotta listen to your old buddy. I always talk about being an Alta Cocker. I got a tie, Alta Cocker. It says Alta. What does that literally mean? It's Yiddish. You don't speak Yiddish. Yeah?
Not really. But Alta Cocker is like old man.
Old nuts or something.
Yeah,
right? Old nuts. And as fate would have it, the New York Daily News TV page has this Geraldo's long run. Geraldo will be 72 on July 4th. A longtime fan, author Bruce Littlefield, points out that Geraldo said in a magazine interview in 1992, quote, "I don't want to grow old on television. I want to bow out 10 years from now when I hope I still look okay," end quote.
That's so funny.
Didn't happen. Probably won't happen anytime soon. So I would have been 59 years old 13 years ago. That would have been the 10-year. So I've gone 13 years beyond my own self-imposed deadline. And, just imagine if there was mandatory retirement, like Walter Cronkite got drummed out at the age of 65 and all the years that he could have. The Naked Cowboy's on the line. What's up, dude? Thanks for calling.
Hey, what's up? Yeah, I had a theory on how he's getting his power tools in.
How's that?
Well, I mean, if he has a big member, he probably just stuck a power tool in the front each time, and they were just used to seeing that.
Is that what you do in Times Square?
Well, I have some experience. My appliance doesn't get that much accreditation.
No prison could hold you, Naked Guy. I appreciate the call. Thank you. 15 minutes after 11 o'clock. Let me take the break here. I've got so much to talk about. We'll be right back.
New York's biggest issues right now. This is Geraldo, 77 WABC.
You keep saying you got something for me. Something you call love, but confess. You've been a messin' where you shouldn't have been a messin'. And now someone else is getting all your best. These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days, these boots are gonna walk all over you.
Happy birthday, Nancy Sinatra. These boots may be made for walking. You got two convicted murderers walking, Richard Madden and David Sweat.
You keep lying.
Whereabouts still unknown. Big bust out. We're checking it. We heard from Plattsburgh, the local newspaper, 20 miles from the scene of the crime. They are extremely dangerous, according to the handout. Reward $50,000 each. They also have now released the video showing the cops in Boston shooting dead the Sunni Muslim extremist, homegrown, who attacked them with allegedly with a knife. Noam, does the video back the cops' account, or do you think it's excessive force?
You know, it's so grainy, this video. It looks like it's a surveillance camera from a nearby store or bank. I can't tell where it's exactly coming from, but the action is taking place so far away that it's hard to tell who all the players are, even with the circles around them. The police put yellow circles around the suspected terrorists and then circles around the police officers.
But one thing that is undeniable, though, is that the guy starts walking away and then comes back to the cops.
I mean, he does, but do they call him over? We don't know what happens.
Right, we have no audio. All we have is video. But he definitely moves back toward the cops. So he's coming back toward the cops. He's got the knife, I guess, in his hand. Now, when he gets to this one area, it does look like he's fairly close. The cops will get on the same side of him, so they don't have a circular firing score. And it does look like he takes, you know, it does look like he takes a step toward the officer with the gun drawn. It's like almost like suicide by cop.
Yeah, some sort of aggressive step.
Oh, it's
The video is very grainy.
Very grainy, but I don't know. It seems to back the cops as far as I can say. Gino in the Bronx, what's up? Thanks for calling 866 Geraldo.
Yeah, the usual motive for anybody helping a skull get out of prison is not because the skull has a big pepperoni and meatballs. It's usually because it's either bribery, i.e. money, or blackmail, as in, you know, gangbangers on the outside trying to go after a family member. That's the only way anybody would ever help any inmate escape from prison. And I wouldn't overlook the possibility, remote though it may be, that a CO may have been in on the deal.
A correction officer.
Yeah, unfortunately it happens.
Well, you think the correction officer could have, someone could have put the muscle on the correction officer for some, either a debt unpaid or some physical threat of violence to a relative of a correction officer?
Well, not so much the latter, but the former, because there are a lot of COs I used to work with during my time as a PO. And they're all good, decent human beings, but every now and then you get one that can be corrupted. And when they go for the money, especially if you got drug dealers who got plenty of money to burn, and they need a new car or some kind of thing, and they think they could get away with it, that CO and whoever prison civilian person may have conspired together, because that's a much more likely reason why anybody would help somebody escape from a prison.
All right, but how do you get the power tools inside, you know?
Well, the COs don't get searched. The civilian employees usually do. But it doesn't matter. If you're the only guard on that cell block at that particular time at night, who's going to tell you that you are going to report something if you're in on the take? So it's a likely possibility that one of the COs could have been in on it, aside from this woman, civilian employee, though she may be, because let's face it, this nonsense about her going for this guy because of his big pepperoni, that's nonsense. Any stupid, unrational individual would have that as a motive. It's usually money or blackmail from the outside.
That's all right, Gino, thanks. Thanks. If you have an idea, if you have any information, give me a call, folks. So I had my big 2020 reunion. You know, I was on 2020. I went to work for ABC in 1970. And I worked for ABC News. And in 19, I had my Good Night America program. Don Imus was my announcer. And that was on for several years. And then they started 2020. They had a disastrous debut in 1978. You may remember, they had these two hosts, one from Australia, somebody else from a magazine. Hmm. It really was a terrible bomb. They changed it, brought in Hugh Downs and Barbara Walters. Anyway, it took off. I did my Elvis special. It was huge. The highest rated television program in that season, I think. Anyway, the show was gigantic. And I got fired in 1985. I got fired because of my objection to Rune Arledge, the legendary chief of ABC News, spiking a story, that is, killing a story by Sylvia Chase about the alleged romantic relationship between the Kennedy brothers and certain mob figures and Marilyn Monroe, the sex symbol of her time. So we talked about that. Hughes and Hayes were the first hosts, very forgettable. And then Hugh Downs and Barbara Walters took over, big hit. So we had our 30th reunion of my being fired, in a sense. But 1985 is 30 years ago.
That's a long time ago.
And I remember it. You know, it's, someone said at that reunion, you know, it's so interesting how time goes so slowly sometimes during the day, particularly if you're still working, but the decades fly by.
Yeah.
And it's 30 years. And to see Stone Phillips,
he was there.
He was there. Right. Bob Brown, the terrific correspondent. Both the writing in retirement. Sylvia Chase, whose story it was that I defended, was there. She's a volunteer teacher in the Bay Area. She looks great. Huh. And all of my old team, Danny Goldfarb, Craig, my brother Craig, who was with me even those days. And, it was just terrific to see everybody catch up and everybody and see how the years had taken their toll. That's the sad part. But it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. I had a great time. What else is happening here, buddy?
The sound of the city, Geraldo, where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
Here comes the story of Eric Kane, the man the authorities came to blame for something that he never done. Put in a prison cell, but one time he could have been the champion of the world.
Hurricane. Reference to Reuben Hurricane Carter. Patterson, New Jersey, right? Wasn't that where the case, the murder case, wrongfully accused and convicted in prison for nearly 20 years? His life obviously turned upside down. But anyway, they called her the Hurricane during her days as a deputy DA in Los Angeles. She went on to become the assistant district attorney in San Francisco. And she is a hurricane of intelligence, of eloquence, and drop-dead gorgeous. My friend and colleague Kimberly Guilfoyle joins us. She's just written a book, Making the Case, How to Be Your Own Best Advocate. Hi, Kim.
Hi, Geraldo. With that introduction, I should stop the interview right there. It cannot possibly get better than
that. Yeah, baby. So, you know, how do you project a seriousness of purpose and intelligence when people are staring at your beautiful cleavage and your wonderful face?
Yeah, well, we're going to start with being subtle right away, right? So basically, you know, it's a fair question. So because I worked as a model, as an actress, movies, commercials.
Weren't you an underwear model at one point?
Yes, models, everything from Macy's, Victoria's Secret, to make money to pay for law school. But, I have found that even in the courtroom, at first people will judge or have a perception about me. But then I find that they are quickly disabused of the notion that they are dealing with a serious individual. You know, in the courtroom, I was undefeated. I took my cases very seriously. I was extremely well prepared. I would argue my cases even without notes so that I had a better ability and chance to connect with the jury, connect with the judge and those in the courtroom. You know, I've worked very hard all my life, you know, and much as people don't know, it's again 4.0, perfect attendance. My brother laughs because he just sees me one way, which is kind of a big nerd. But yeah, you've got to like dress professionally. I look very nice when I go on the air at Fox. Of course, they don't mind if you dress with a little bit more, flair. Right, but I mean, you know, I think people see when they listen to me, they hear my legal analysis or my political commentary, they understand that they're dealing with somebody who is, you know, well prepared and is going to be a formidable adversary if I'm debating against somebody on the other side.
Kimberly Guilfoyle, the host of The Five and of the Outnumbered program. The Five is a huge hit. I think it's the second highest rated, well, maybe third after Megyn Kelly and Bill O'Reilly, but it's huge
at 5 o'clock. We beat them, but yeah, those are both two great shows. And like you said, I mean, at Fox, we just kind of compete with ourselves, right? Because we have all the, you know, top, 15-something rated shows in cable news. And The Five is number one at 5 o'clock in all of cable, which is pretty great because that's the drive time. But it's, you know, it's all about the chemistry. We were lucky to have you on. You did a fantastic job. And you're going to be on back with us tomorrow, actually, right, on The Five. So that should be fun. I love working with you. We've worked many, many years together on weekends.
I adore you. Tell me about your family.
I adore you, too. Yeah, so, you know, I'm really a product of, you know, my mother and father in every single way, both in terms of how I treat other people, how I, you know, look, my heart, my enthusiasm, being, you know, first generation. My mother was born in Aguadilla in Puerto Rico. My father was born in Ireland. They met in San Francisco and fell in love.
Cool.
And, you know, we just thought this was going to be a great thing. We're a tight-knit, you know, family, and then unfortunately...
So you're an Irish Rican.
Yeah, an Irish Rican, or one time you called me a Mick-a-Rican.
Mick-a-Rican, yeah.
Right. You got to love that.
So how do you... I mean, those are two volatile and vibrant cultures. I mean, how do you balance?
You know what? So when people get me riled up on the show, they're like, whoa, was that the Irish side or Puerto Rican side? I'm like, a little bit of both, you know? But I think with great, you know, passion and heart, and you have this too, you know, in abundance, the enthusiasm and being genuine, and people know what they're getting with you. You and I, on any given day, we do not mail it in. We're, you know, we're true to ourselves, to our character, to what we believe in, and you sometimes people are surprised by how we come down on an issue, because we don't have like a formulaic response. And I was raised very much by my parents to be an individual, and especially as a young woman growing up without my mother when she died when I was 11, my dad wanted me to have the self-esteem and the confidence to be able to fight for myself, and hence, like you mentioned, my nickname in the courtroom, the Hurricane. I love boxing. You're a great boxer, so you know, we have a lot in common.
Kimberly Guilfoyle, my guest, making the case how to be your own best advocate, is her book. What's the most important advice you give to someone to make their case?
Yeah, to make their case, you've got to believe it in order to sell it and convey it to someone else. And I tell people, like, you know, don't be afraid of the no. It doesn't hurt to ask. Put yourself out there. Pull your facts, your arguments, what you want to achieve. Put it together and try and move on target. My dad said to me, the worst thing that can happen, Kimberly, is I'm going to say no. Is that so bad? At least you know you've tried. And at the end of his life, he said, you know, no regrets, meaning you take your ups, you take your downs, your successes, your failures. It's all part of the fabric and the chapters of your life that bring you to the, you know, end conclusion. And it really gave me some peace when my dad passed, that I knew that he had, like, lived a full life, that he really felt that he had lived a life with no regrets, meaning that he conducted himself in a way that he didn't make this life about himself. You make it about other people, how you can give back, but also, like, do some things to try and help yourself, like strive and try to achieve your goals. He told me, anything, you know, your brother can do or a guy can do, you can do better. And I was like, all right, I like that, you know? So that's how I've kind of approached my life. You know, we've had all of us have had our ups and downs. Like, we didn't just end up here on Fox News, you know, sitting in the lake chair or whatever, you know, by accident. It came through hard work. It came through working weekends. It came through working the holidays and saying to the boss, hey, give me a chance to fill in so I could do general news anchoring, et cetera, instead of just, you know, legal analysis based on my profession as a prosecutor. It's always taking, you know, risks and taking a chance. So I tell people, look, I feel like I was born to be fearless, courageous. You know, growing up then, you know, no parents now. I have a small family, my little boy, Ronan, who's 8. My brother, who lives in Los Angeles, that I helped raise since he was...
What about the challenge of being a single mom?
You know, it's not easy. Like, people say, oh, are you going to tour? I'm going to do some book stuff and touring. But, you know, it's very important to me. To every morning, I make Ronan's breakfast. I make his lunch. I take him to school, and it's important. He sees my face. He's with me. We have a great time in the morning. I put him on my back, you know, carry him around. It's just fun. It's fun, and he knows how much he is loved. And it's tough if I have to, like, travel or do something like that, because I don't want to, you know, be away from him. I don't have, like, somebody else here to sort of, you know, pick it up. That being said, you know my ex-husband, Eric Valenci, very well, and we co-parent together fantastically. So when I've had...
He's a good man. I like his parents, too.
Yeah, they're amazing.
Your in-laws.
Valenci. I just spent the weekend, you know, with them up in the Hamptons. You know, we're like a little village, a little family together, and, you know, even when things end in divorce, it doesn't mean that you can't have tremendous love and compassion and respect for one another. You know, they're great. The mornings that I fill in for Elizabeth Hasselbeck and do Fox and Friends, like, Eric will take Ronan that night and bring him to school so that I can go and anchor the...
He's a good man. I like him. He used to date my wife at the University of Wisconsin.
Isn't that unbelievable? Small world.
Making the Case is the book, How to Be Your Own Best Advocate. Before I let you go, Kimberly Guilfoyle, what are your thoughts about the great escape from the Dannemora prison upstate New York?
Yeah, well, I think it's a compelling television, you know, to watch, and it looks like they had a female involved in it that was able to help them make this escape. I mean, it's pretty compelling when you see this. It's like the Fox show that used to be on Prison Break, right? So you've got
right.
Fugitives on the run. It's definitely going to be one to watch.
I bet if I was a lifer, I could... No, I take it back. All right, Kimberly, I love you. I'll see you, if not today, I'll see you tomorrow on The 5. Making the Case is your book, sure to be a bestseller. How to Be Your Own Best Advocate. Kimberly Guilfoyle, thank you.
Thank you, my love, and you can check it out on Amazon and BarnesandNobles.com. Big kiss.
Okay, Kim.
Bye.
47 minutes after 11, back in a flash.
From New York, for New York, live, local, on it, Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
So stay tuned to 77 WABC, Curtis and Kuby coming up, but the point I want to make is that stay tuned to get the latest update on these two escaped murderers. As of right now, the $100,000 reward has not yielded any information leading to their apprehension. They are still at large, considered extremely dangerous. $50,000 reward out for each of them. Richard Matt, the Lothario with the big member. And David Swed, his 34-year-old partner in crime. This stunning escape. You know, if they never solved that thing, wouldn't that be one of the enduring mysteries?
Oh, yeah.
One thing we haven't talked about today, and I just want to give you a heads up that we will be addressing it tomorrow on Tuesday, June the 9th, is this wave of extra cops, the 330 of them that are being sent to certain targeted precincts. As the mayor reaches out to try to do something about the concern over this this spike, they have this mini murder epidemic we have going on, and epidemic of gun violence. I don't know if epidemic's the right word, certainly a spike. The operation is called Summer All Out. 330 cops. You know, I don't know when you consider they've got to do, you know, shifts. I don't know how many actual extra cops you're going to have in these troubled precincts. And it would seem to me that most of the violence happens at night anyway, or weekends. And I'd wonder, they're smart though. I mean, the NYPD is so sharp about that, that I assume that they will make a difference. But, you know, the other story, the companion story to the, you know, to the spike in murder and mayhem is there's also been complaints about police rudeness and other misconduct have plummeted. In other words, the cops are being much more polite than they have ever been. The Post has a great story. Gripes plummet. Ed Mullins, the president of the Sergeants Benevolent Association, he said these statistics about the plummeting complaints about the cops, like the increase in crime statistics, indicative of a complete change in policing in New York City, a change that was demanded by political pandering and weak public officials who now have a kinder police officer and a growing list of homicide and shooting victims piling up in our streets. So Sergeant Mullen sees a direct relationship between the spike in murder and the cops now assuming this this new, more genteel demeanor. So we'll talk anyway. We'll talk about this summer all-out operation tomorrow. Joan Rivers, my dear friend, would have been 82 years old today. We miss her enormously. So we send out our love to her daughter, Melissa. Joan is none like you and never will be. Thank you very much for listening, everybody. Have a good Monday. We'll see you right here tomorrow on 77 WABC.